This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 119. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or portfolio for your photography. Squarespace features an elegant interface, gorgeous templates that show your photos big, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code IMPROVE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. Today you are joined by photographers from all around the world, shooting all different kinds of genres and at all different skill levels of photography. But each week we come together for our weekly dose of photography knowledge. And to talk about today's topics, we have just about everybody on the line. Jeff Harmon, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And Erica Kaufman.
Hello.
And Nick Page.
Thank you for having me.
And Darren Miller.
Heyo.
Well, everybody, we have some interesting news topics to talk about that have come out this week. Some more kind of photography-centric ones. Jeff, why don't you tell us about the iPhone 7 camera leaks that we've been hearing?
Okay, so yeah, they're kind of rumored to be, there's going to be a camera revolution. Not like they're arming themselves, but but a camera revolution. Apple just bought a company called LINX, with a capital X on the end. It's an Israeli camera tech company who apparently has some kind of sensor technology that's going to improve the image processing, improve low light performance, and make it a lot closer to what a DSLR can do in a phone. So interesting stuff. They dropped quite a bit of cash on it, and it's going to be interesting to see if the rumors turn out to be true on what's coming here.
Darren, what do you think? Is this hype, or do you think we might see something cool come out of this?
Well, it makes sense with their historical release schedule. So usually when they have like the, if this is going to be on the 7, this would be 2016's model, but usually on the every other year model, the 2015, the 6S Plus or whatever they decide to call it, it's definitely going to be the greatest iPhone since the last iPhone. But in the same sense, I think that this is where the camera upgrade is going to come in. So depending on how quickly they kind of get their stuff in order, I think we could possibly see this become a reality. They talked about it prior to this announcement of them purchasing LINX.
My question whenever I see news articles like this is, do they have something really cool that was worth $20 million to Apple? And Apple's not going to get fooled, right? Like, they better have something really cool if they're going to plunk down $20 million. Like, Apple knows if it's going to be good or not. Like, it's a big company. But my question is always, is this a really innovative technology, or are they just buying up patents here?
Right.
Because, I mean, if you look at the description of the company, innovative image processing and advanced sensor and optics technology. So just, we got cool camera stuff. The description of their company. Erica, yeah. What do you think? What do you want to see from an iPhone that it's not doing now? What would get you really excited about an iPhone 7 or whatever brand of camera coming out? What do you want to see from the camera?
Yeah, well, I'm a new iPhone 6er, so I've been pretty impressed with my, you know, upgrade from the iPhone 4S. But I still think that it is lacking in some areas. I think it's not crystal clear. I would love to see, you know, more sharpness. I would love to see better color coming out of it. I think it does a pretty good job of, you know, exposure and things like that. But I would love to actually be able to control it a little more. I would love to be able to work with the exposure, work with the white balance, and essentially do some of the things that I love to do, you know, when I'm shooting in manual with my DSLR.
Yeah. How about you, Darren?
I think that the hardest thing is the focus. I think that if they actually get some of the optics in there, being able to possibly have the conversion of a telephoto capability would really make me excited. But right now I can shoot a picture of a cityscape and it's just wide. And then if I zoom in, it's just cropping it out on that 8-megapixel offering that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 8 megapixels is the one that really gets me. Now that I have a 14.7 megapixel screen that I'm viewing it on, every time one of my iPhone photos pops up in Lightroom, it's like blink, and it's like, what's that? I'm just seeing a thumbnail. What's happening? I can't zoom in, and that's all that's there. And you know, that's been fine, 8 megapixels. Until we got 16 megapixel screen, and now I take a picture with my phone and it can't even fill the computer screen. It's not good. Jeff, what about you? What do you think of this?
I just don't know. It seems like we've got some physics barriers that are preventing the camera sensors in a phone from being anything like it is on even a compact camera or a mirrorless camera, which, you know, is a lot more megapixels. The sensors are significantly larger. So it just, I don't know. It'll be really interesting to see if they have something real here, something that's actually revolutionary and not just evolutionary or small improvements. And who knows if it's even going to end up in an iPhone. People saw the purchase because that was a public record sort of thing that the purchase got made since they were a company that's public. So, but Apple's made absolutely no announcement about how this thing will be used, if it will ever be used. Who knows? It could end up in some laptop kind of configuration that does something there rather than the phone.
That's true. They got webcams as well. And now I think the making it similar to DSLR, you know, it's just gimmicky language. They're really puffing this up quite a bit. I don't think anybody really expects that to happen just now. Maybe many years from now, the sensor size just won't matter. But I think we got a good long ways, a long time that it does matter. But interesting nonetheless. And with the next release of the iPhone, I think we are pretty likely to see a good camera update. It's a place where iPhone is really starting to fall behind on the specs. In terms of image quality, I feel like it's really in line with the comparisons that I've seen between the iPhone camera and the Galaxy S6 and stuff. Looks like the image quality is pretty close in line. In terms of specs, no, but in terms of actual image quality, it's about sixes as far as I've seen. But what we saw with the 5S was a big camera improvement. Then we got the 6. That was a major device improvement. I'm hoping that with the 6S or 7 that we'll see some interesting things happen in the camera. Well, next we saw a story on Kickstarter about macro light, about an interesting macro lighting device. And I thought this one was interesting. Most of the things that happen on Kickstarter, I never get real excited about. But this one actually looks pretty cool. What do you guys think of this?
I watched this video, and this is the name of the product, or is it the company? It's called Adaptalux. And what it is it's this macro constant light that you mount right to your camera. And it's actually got three little LED lights that come out on these long flexible wands. And you can actually set up like three-point lighting setups. And they come with different modifiers and stuff. And the results they're getting from their macro shots are just awesome. It's really, really exciting looking, and the video is really cool. It's got like this awesome epic music, and it made me want to like just throw money at them. But
I don't care what you have.
Exactly. Please. Exactly. Anytime I see a well-produced video, I just want to throw my money and my wallet at the screen. But yeah, it's a really cool looking product, and the results they're getting with this lighting setup is really, really good. And what's cool about it is the fact that they're little constant LED lights. You can get them really close to your subject, and that does several things. The light doesn't need to be as big, because the closer you get the light to the subject, the softer the light is, so they don't look like little small lights. Plus, since they're constant lights, you can use this for video as well. So they're showing all these uses for cinematography and stuff. So really cool looking product, I thought.
Yeah, I think so too. I especially like the filters that they're, advertising with it, all the different colors that they have on there. I'm just like drooling over the possibilities of some awesome ring shots using this thing at weddings.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. The thing that I always have a difficult time with in macro photography is if you just use a regular speed light, it's huge compared to the item. And so remember, the size of the light source controls how soft it is. And so if you take this humongous light source and put it, I mean, if you compare, like, let's say we're taking a picture of a wedding ring, right? Like the speed light is, I don't know, maybe five times, the speed light head is probably five, maybe 10 of those rings on there. So it's like if somebody was standing next to a softbox that was like 35 feet tall, right? So it puts such soft light on the subject that you don't get any interesting shadows. It's just way too soft. And so the thing that excited me about this is it's a tiny light for macro photography so that you actually see shadows and highlights in the subject. And I thought that was really interesting. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't been invented before, but it doesn't look like the Kickstarter's doing too great. I hope this makes it through. We'll see what happens.
Have any of you ever back to a Kickstarter camera kind of project?
I've donated a couple of different things.
I've been tempted, but I have never bought.
Did you get the thing that you backed?
Once, I think.
So I've done it once with it was a project called Clear Shot. It was the idea was a tripod thing that kind of folds up into a credit card sized thing you can keep in your wallet. And then whenever you wanted to like actually put your smartphone onto the little tripod, you unfolded it and put it in, put your phone there and you could take pictures with it. And so I carry around my wallet all the time and I have something that I can put my phone on to tripod it and like taking time lapse stuff with it. And it's been cool. It worked. I got the product. But I know there have been a lot of people who backed it and even got it funded, like it got the money it needed. And then as they went to actually go do the production, it was so much more money than they thought that they got killed.
That sucks. Yeah, it looks like they're a little over half of what their goal is. They have a goal of 100,000 something or other. So what are those, pounds or some pounds? Some denomination that is not American. Some mysterious symbol to the left of the numbers. But they're a little over half with 16 days to go. So it looks like we're going to have to throw our wallets at them if we're going to actually see this happen, at least this time around. But such a cool idea because, like you said, you can get your lights in close. And one benefit of them being so small is that it would be really hard to get three different light sources that close if you were using like speed lights, because they would be, you know, doing 3-point lighting with speed lights on a tiny little subject is not very easy, you know. Mm-hmm. Just, yeah. Okay, that's it.
You got to back that sucker. Nick, meet the UK. UK, meet Nick. Island off the coast of Europe.
I should have just listened to the accents.
That's right.
I thought he looked a little pale.
Also, we saw a frightening and hilarious at the same time video that we found through Petapixel, but it's just a YouTube video. We'll be sure to put in the show notes of showing what happens to your luggage once you check it. The answer, if you're wondering what happens, is it gets punched in the mouth by this incredible robot. And so, lesson learned. Do not put your photo gear in checked baggage. I actually had a problem a little while ago that I put a camera in my Pelican case, and those Pelican cases are just, I mean, they are just tanks. And so I don't like to check it, but they made me check it, and I thought, oh, well, it's in a Pelican case. It should be okay. And mysteriously, the next time I shot it, the LCD was busted, and I thought, I just took this out of the Pelican case. How could the LCD be busted? Yeah, maybe it got punched in the face in an airport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after watching this video, you see exactly how it probably got broken. That's just crazy.
And on our way back from Oregon, I actually got my Pelican case mixed up with another guy, and he was a nuclear engineer, and I wonder what he had in there, because it went through the checked bag thing, and I'm like, wow, I wonder if that got punched.
Oh, man. Probably not good. Did your hand turn orange after you picked up his bag?
I'm still glowing. Yeah.
Yeah, those Pelican cases, I mean, they're super tough on the outside, and I love it for that. But it doesn't mean that nothing is, I mean, if you rattle anything hard enough, it can break the little fine electronics, even if it doesn't get crushed. So, you know, they're great, but it's not a panacea for you know, protecting your photo gear at the same time. And Nick, Erica, what do you guys do when you travel? What do you do with your photo gear? Because like Darren and I are packing for China right now. And my issue is sometimes, you know, we get on these little tiny airplanes going within China and the baggage restrictions are really, really low. Mm-hmm. And so usually I just pack everything in a really heavy carry-on and I just carry it all on. But what do you do with that kind of situation?
I've only really flown with my equipment once. I flew into Vegas, and I have a low pro big backpack, and I researched making sure that it was going to be small enough to be carry on. And that's what I did. I just kept it with me at all times because there's no way I'm going to check in my DSLR backpack or anything. But I know I'm going to Hawaii this summer for a wedding, and I'm a little bit nervous that they might be a little bit more strict about carry-on size. How about you, Erica?
Yeah, I've actually traveled a lot with my equipment, and I've done international destination weddings. So I've had to carry, like, you know, basically my full gear bag with me. So what I typically do, since I absolutely will not check my lenses and my camera bodies and stuff, I will usually put my tripods and my light stands, and sometimes I'll even, you know, be courageous and put my speed lights in my checked baggage. And then I carry on everything else either in a big giant purse so that people don't think it's like an actual suitcase, or just in the camera bag backpack that I have. Mm. And I've never had a problem with it. I've never had anybody make me check it. One time I was like in the front row, so, you know, I couldn't put anything underneath the seat in front of me. And the flight attendant said something to me about it because the bins were full. She's like, can we, you know, just check that gate side or whatever they call it? And I told her that I had several thousand dollars worth of equipment in there and that I would not do it. And she understood and actually put it up front with her, you know, with the flight attendant gear. So it was fine.
That's good. Yeah, I'm always scared when you start hearing the stewardesses saying, or the flight attendants saying, you know, they're like, oh, we're running out of baggage space. It's like, mm-hmm. No, quick.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is
something. Exactly.
I have, if that happens and you know that you're going to be, you know, like one of the last people on the plane, go up to the counter before you get on the plane and tell them your situation, and they'll make sure that they either put you on the plane first or reserve an overhead spot like by your seat for you.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And, you know, that kind of brings up a thought that I hadn't really accounted for my light stands that I'm going to have to take. I'll just work off of monopods. Like, I'll put my lights on monopods because those fold up so much smaller, and I'm going to have some help. So, yeah, a monopod and a tripod, you can just kind of throw in your luggage and mm-hmm. in the bottom of your big suitcase or whatnot. But light stands, those don't fold up very small. So
I have some small ones that I got specifically for traveling, since I do destination weddings. I don't know the name of them off the top of my head, Nick, but I can send you some information about them, and I can also send the information to you guys to put in the show notes if you'd like. They cool. fold up small enough to go into a suitcase.
Well, we want to take a minute and thank Animoto. Animoto is a sponsor of the Improved Photography Podcast. We have a special page set up for you on the Animoto website to welcome you from the Improved Photography Podcast. That's at animoto.com/improve. So what Animoto does for you is it's just a super simple way of creating gorgeous professional slideshows for your photography. So whether you want to use it to, you know, show off your work from a big trip that you're doing, like one of the Improved Photography travel groups, or if you want to do it at a family reunion this summer, or use it at one of these weddings that we're talking about, and that's my use case for it is when I shoot a wedding, I always use Animoto. It's a much more professional looking slideshow than we get out of something just like Lightroom. That's just a real basic thing. And it's the way for still photographers to start adding a little bit of video into your business. You know, one gig and you've easily paid for this, but even just for hobbyists, Animoto is really, really fun. And you can try it totally for free. Just go to animoto.com/improve. And you can use the promo code IMPROVE to get 15% off a pro account. So check it out, animoto.com/improve. And we also want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring the Improved Photography Podcast. I have had a constant battle for years with my photography portfolio website. I spend a ton of time on Improved Photography, making it look perfect and everything. And sometimes it means that my actual portfolio gets left a little bit by the wayside. Until I switched to Squarespace and it became totally easy to make a beautiful, professional-looking website that I'm happy to put my name on. Darren, I know you've been taking a look at Squarespace. What's your experience been like?
I love it. It enables me to keep my portfolio up to date. It also, the drag and drop feature is great for your pictures. And I talked to their customer support once and text support and said, hey, do I have to really worry about scaling my file sizes down? They said, not to a certain extent, because it saves 4 or 5 different images of theirs. So it looks great, clear on Jim's 5K display all the way down to a smartphone. So it's really awesome. And I think that it really makes my webpage look a ton better. And it's also up to date, which is a huge lifesaver.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are using Squarespace. Are you using Squarespace as well, Nick?
Yeah, I've been using it for probably, I don't know, 8 months or something now, and I absolutely love it. I've changed my themes a couple times, and changing a theme is super easy. You don't lose all the work you put into it. And the landing pages that they've recently made available are super nice. You can put your contact information right on the front page. It's just been really, really good for me.
Well, cool. Well, if you're interested in trying out Squarespace, you can go to squarespace.com and then be sure to enter the offer code IMPROVE, and that'll get you 10% off what's already a really good deal. It starts at $8. And we thank Squarespace for their support. Squarespace, build it beautiful. All right. In our main segment, I want to talk about something that I've been thinking a lot about lately. We do our portfolio reviews of many of you guys have already purchased portfolio reviews from us. And it's an opportunity for you to upload, between 7 and 14 photos. And we'll look at it. And we basically record a little mini podcast for you about, 7-10 minutes long, looking through each one of your photos, giving you an idea of what we think about each one, talking about what you need to work on generally as a photographer. And the one thing that I find myself saying over and over and over again in these portfolios for photographers just like you guys, in fact, it is many of you guys, the one thing that I keep saying is get a vision of one photo and put all of your efforts into making one photo the very best that you possibly can. Because I keep seeing really good work, photographers that have put in a lot of work to get sharp, well-exposed, shallow depth of field on a portrait, nice-looking professional photos, but they don't have any soul to the photo. It doesn't really have any mood. It's not epic. It's not the kind of photography that we all, that's jaw-dropping. It's just nice professional work. And so to get to that next level, the one thing that I keep recommending is, flip through magazines, look on 500px.com for a couple weeks, and just work on getting a vision of something you want to make of your own. Find a location, find a model for it, even if it's just a friend. It doesn't have to cost any money. Maybe if it's a landscape, you're searching all over trying to find the perfect barn or the perfect location to take this landscape. Wait for the perfect conditions, the weather and everything, and then go take a photo. This is accessible to everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a professional photographer or you're a hobbyist. Anybody can do this. And in my opinion, it's one of the very best things you can do to take your photography to the next level. So all of us have different styles. So what I want to do is take a minute with each one of you and pass it around and see kind of what your process is for when you're wanting to take that, the photo, the one that you're just totally happy with. What's your process that it looks like? Nick, I'm going to throw this over to you first because you've just been road tripping it, as you always seem to be. What did it look like when you were preparing for your shoot and how did you go about making what you wanted to make?
Well, I had to travel down into southeastern Idaho, which is about it's like a 8-hour drive, I guess, for me from where I'm at. And I knew that I was going to be literally like an hour and a half from the Grand Tetons, which is one of those bucket list places for me. That if you've never seen photos of the Grand Tetons, you got to check it out. They're these super jagged Lord of the Rings looking awesome mountains. And so since I knew I was probably going to be going down there, I started researching, okay, like I need a foreground element because I can't just take a picture of a mountain. So I got on Google Earth, and Google Earth has been like my tool of choice for researching these places I go to. And I go to Google Earth, I go to the general area that I knew I was going to be going, and I just start looking at pictures that people have taken of various landmarks and stuff. And anybody that's been there knows that there's a couple of these really iconic barns that are situated pretty much at the foot of the mountain. So before I even went, I knew I had a basic idea of what I, how I was going to shoot the shot, how I was going to approach the shot. And I even knew what time of day I wanted to be there. I knew that the early morning time was probably going to be the best when the light comes up and it starts hitting the mountains and creating all the texture and stuff. And so just through that, I had this preconceived notion of what I wanted to shoot, and I got lucky and the weather cooperated and I was able to make it happen. So I literally drove probably, it was an 11-hour drive home, and I came home with like 3 photos. And as sad as that sounds, those are like 3 of the most exciting photos to me, because I worked so hard to make those happen. And I would rather come home with 3 awesome photos than like 20 like photos. You know, these are photos that I'm going to be printing and hopefully selling, maybe. But I worked so hard for those 3 photos, and because of that, I'm so much prouder of them than I would have been if I wouldn't have had to work so hard to create them.
So what makes you happy with the photo is the amount of work that you put into it, just the quality of the photo, or do you find the value from, you know, shooting something that other people don't find or haven't shot before?
Well, I wish I could say that other people haven't shot that barn, but it's literally like 1 of 4 foreground objects in the entire valley. Uh-huh. So I'm pretty sure lots and lots and lots of people have shot it, but I just try to make mine a little bit better than theirs. You know, I would be lying if I said that I hadn't seen that photo before when I went down and made it, but I just was like, you know, well, I'm going to do mine right. I'm going to expose mine properly, and I'm going to make sure it's super sharp, and I'm going to do it at the perfect time of day, and just do all the little things that I can do to try to make my version a little better than theirs. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, Erica, how about you? I'm guessing you want to talk about portrait photography, since that's your main genre. What's your process when you want to take the ultimate photo?
I think I have 2 different processes depending on what exactly I'm shooting, if I'm shooting for a client or if I'm shooting for myself. So I'll maybe talk about shooting for myself, because that is usually the more difficult one because it's a little more elaborate. I, like Nick, also use Google Earth a lot. It's such a good way to scout locations without actually having to go and, you know, drive out there and find them. So I use that a lot. And then I also, I network with other photographers. I've said this before on the Portrait Session podcast, but Columbus has such an awesome photography community, and they're all very supportive, and everybody's really willing to share ideas and locations and things like that. So if I'm looking, if I have a specific vision in mind, I'll oftentimes just post in one of the photography groups here in Columbus and kind of explain what I'm looking for, and I usually get really great feedback from people. So that has been, you know, another great resource for me. And then I usually also will work with a set designer who is in charge of, you know, finding the perfect location and getting everything set up exactly how, you know, I want it to look. So, you know, that person kind of takes some of that work off of my hands a little bit, which makes it nice.
So where do you get your inspiration from for a shoot like that?
It just kind of depends. I mean, sometimes it's just something crazy that pops into my head. Sometimes I'll see, you know, other photographers that I really admire. I'll see something that they've done and think it would be really awesome to kind of put my own unique spin on it. So it just kind of varies. I do follow other photographers, and I do, you know, get inspiration from other photographers, but I always obviously try to put my own spin on it and do my own thing. Just kind of maybe loosely based on ideas that I've seen other people do.
Okay, very cool. Jeff, tell us what you do from a hobbyist perspective.
Well, okay, so I'm not shooting full time, and my mostly it's the weekends is the time that I have to go do it. Some evenings, especially for sunsets, lots of times opportunities to do that. I'm really lucky that I live in the foothills of a mountain here in Salt Lake Valley. And so I have a view on my back deck of a mountain range where the sun rises and sets right over the top of it most of the year. And so all it takes is adding in just a little bit of clouds, and it's just an awesome desert sunrise, sunset scene almost every day. And so I have lots of choices, but there's also lots of people trying to shoot those. So to make it different for me, one, I try to make sure that I don't show the city elements. I take those out of either through composition or maybe a little bit through Photoshop too, to make it so that it looks like you're just out in the desert. There's no, you're not in a Salt Lake City area to see it. Another one is I'm trying to do a lot with panorama. So I've taken a couple shots. I have one that I took recently where it's made up of 28 separate shots, and then using Photoshop to stitch it all together, or there's even a Microsoft tool I've been trying out recently. But it produces images then that have way more detail than you can get in a single shot, even with a very high megapixel camera. The one shot that was 28 shots, it ends up with all the resolution after I've cropped it and put it all together, it's about a 204 megapixel shot that you get out of it at the end.
Wow, and that's with my crop
sensor.
And, yeah, and a PC handled that?
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. And actually, I kind of like the Microsoft tool that I've been trying a little better. It does a little better of putting it all together so that it doesn't look so curved as you go around and move. And I'm learning lots of stuff. So I have a long ways to go to figure out how to do it all. I know there's tripod stuff that I can do. I need probably get an L bracket so that I can get it better centered and make it so that I can improve the image. So I'm learning a ton that way, but it's technical, it's challenging, and it's different then because not everyone's investing the kind of time it takes. So when you do a sunset or a sunrise, I think was the one I was doing there. When you do that and it's coming up, you literally have, you know, like 20 seconds to catch it at just the right spot where you waited it for just to peek over the mountain, and you can get use the F11 to make it star and stuff like that to get all the shots. So to get 28 shots that fast, it's tough. It's really fun to try to do.
So what's your use case for making a photo that huge? Are you printing it gigantic, or why does this technique interest you?
The challenge of it, I guess, is part of it, but also I'm shooting a crop sensor, so there's not nearly as much sensor data there to play with as you would have on a much larger or full frame camera to be able to get it. So to some degree, I'm trying to compensate a little bit for that. And make it so that I have more detail to play with. Some of it is I want to have the ability to change the shadows. So as you get to the center, I usually expose for the brightest part. I figure out what I want my settings to be there. But then as I go then away from the sunrise, it goes across quite a bit of the landscape. Then the shadows and it gets really dark on another end. So doing it this way, it's just really powerful to be able to have a lot of data to play with to change that throughout. And I played around a little bit with some auto settings too, so that as it gets to the brightest parts, it automatically will adjust a little bit to compensate for that when it's away from it. Just, I don't know, maybe it's the appeal of it because it's so technical. I really like that piece of it.
Admit it, it's just because you're a nerd.
Full blown, yes.
And I mean that in the nicest of ways. In my world, that's a compliment. Darren, how about you?
Mine's not so much about landscape photography, and it's kind of a cross between that and portrait photography, but I just kind of go off of my mood. For instance, one day I got up and I decided to drive out to Aspen, Colorado because I wanted to change of pace, or I've shown up at the airport a couple times, and just depending on my mood and how much money I have in my bank account, I'll say, okay, I want a round trip ticket to this city to spend the weekend there, and I'll walk around and do street photography. And depending on the mood, that someone will just jump out as far as the subject, and I'll try to capture that and relay that through my emotion and try to convey their emotion. Essentially, I think with street photography being a completely different genre than what a lot of us do on the podcast, it's really kind of neat to put yourself in someone else's shoes, and it gives you kind of a perspective into their world and kind of makes whatever might be making you either really happy or really sad in your world seem a little bit less significant. And then it also makes you have a little bit more empathy for mankind. So I think that that's kind of what I do with my personal projects. If I'm not shooting paid portrait work and stuff like that, street photography is my go-to escape, or just doing landscapes in a beautiful spot like Aspen during the fall color time. I think that it's just having that change of pace, having that itch to travel and that itch just to get out there and try something new is what gets me to that creative process. And similar to what Nick said, there's, you can use Google Maps, but we also had Scott Duncan on the podcast a while back ago, and he mentioned a really cool resource called Map 500px, and we'll link you over that into the show notes. But that's a really great app as well, to where if you just pull up this website, you can actually see photos that are taken, and they're actually a little bit higher catered quality to what you're going to see in that area. And then you can actually find maybe some inside spots that someone else may have photographed in a really cool way, so you can actually put your own spin on it.
I'm here to sort out the ulterior motives. Now, I know Jeff is shooting these huge high megapixel panoramas because he's a nerd. Mm-hmm. Darren, I know that you're going out and doing street photography because you've been getting dates from this. I listened to the Portrait Session podcast.
Yeah.
And I heard you talk about that experience of getting a date from doing street photography. Well done.
Yes, sir. It works like a charm. I'm a photographer and I know beautiful people. It's a great line.
Very cool. Well, that's awesome. I wish I had an eye for street photography. Maybe some days you can teach me the way of the Jedi, but I am not there yet. To me, it takes a very well-placed subject that I've totally thought out and controlled every little bit of the frame before I feel like I can make a photo. So I really admire the people that can do that. Well, everybody, we had some awesome things that you guys shared, your kind of approach to putting together your shoots. But in every episode, before we sign out, we like to give a doodad of the week. Let me send this one over in reverse order. How about Erica first?
Okay, so my doodad of the week is a super cheap but super useful thing, probably more so for portrait photographers. So it is actually an ammo box.
Nice.
Yeah, it's $3.
I don't care what it's for. I want an ammo box.
But I use it to hold my AA batteries. So as a wedding photographer, you know, I have so many speed lights and triggers and all kinds of stuff that require me to have about 50 AA batteries on me at all times. So I carry an ammo box, and it holds the batteries perfectly, and it lets you, you know, you can put them in right side up so that you know that they are fresh and, you know, powered up, or you can put them in upside down and you know that they've been used. And it's just really convenient. They fit perfectly in my big Think Take bag that I take with me to weddings, and they're super cheap. So I would highly recommend it if you have a lot of AA batteries that you have to carry around with you.
Do you ever say to your assistant, get to the chopper?
No, but maybe I should start saying that.
All right, Darren, how about you?
Mine's more on the nerdy subject. I actually found this article on Petapixel, and there's this new camera, and it's very enticing, except for the fact that it only produces images that are 30 by 40 pixels wide, but hopefully they'll develop it a little bit more. It's a good start.
30 by 40 pixels?
Yeah, so really, really bad. like maybe a flip phone clamshell quality. Maybe something like a Motorola Razr could display it properly, but the sensor actually doubles as a solar panel, so it's not quite there yet. It's definitely putting the buggy in front of the horse, but still, I think it's awesome that we're starting to become a little bit more efficient. So maybe we'll get longer battery life in these mirrorless systems because maybe they'll just turn it into a solar panel. Who knows?
Maybe they'll make a camera robot and then we'll get disintermediated. I'd be careful with that one.
Very true. Good point.
It reminded me of the scene of The Office where Dwight says that they got to make the robots plug into the wall so that the robots don't overtake the world. Yeah. All right, Jeff, how about you?
Mine's not, it's hard. This isn't a doodad because it's part of my camera. I've had the 70 Mark II now for several months. And to be honest, it's been so much more as far as features and functions than I've ever had. It's taken me a while to figure out how to use the darn thing. It's not been so easy. And some of it's very, very new stuff. There's several things that are built into the camera that it's a first for Canon. So
yeah, like the focus modes. I looked at the 70 Mark II and it has so many different focus modes. I was confused when I looked through there. It has a lot.
That's going to be, I think I'm going to actually write an article on that because I just figured that out today as I was playing around with it in the snow. But this one, the feature then that is really kind of new, I believe it's a first for Canon cameras, is something they call anti-flicker mode. And if any of you have ever shot in a indoors where there's bad fluorescent type lights, that are always flickering on and off. They flicker so fast that our eyes don't really see it much, but your camera certainly can. And if you do that, there's this problem you get when you go to edit the photos later where some of them will look one way, and then there's every once in a while there's one that's totally different as far as color balance or even exposure, and it's because of the lights flickering. And your camera shutter happened to catch it when that light was flickering off, when it wasn't lighting the scene the same consistency. And in the 70 Mark II, they have a new mode that will compensate for that. So even though you push the shutter button to take the picture, it will detect when that light is on or off and only release the shutter when it's finally consistently on. And it cleans up your shots so that you don't run into this problem all along the way. So really kind of a cool thing. I haven't used it yet. I just have been learning about it. But I did, as I was trying to say, what is this flicker mode thing? I found that on a website called thedigitalpicture.com, they had an example of a series of photos they took. And it was seriously way too fast for indoor. You wouldn't actually use it this way. But if you had the shutter at 1/1000th of a second, and you use the continuous 10 frames per second shooting that the 70 Mark II can do, you can actually see a yellow band of light moving through a scene on a white background. You Wow. can see that when the flicker mode's not there. And when it is, when you turn it on, it pretty well goes away so that they all look consistent and you get the nice white background without the yellow stripe. So really kind of a cool feature of the camera that's really brand new, and hopefully other manufacturers will implement something similar.
Oh, very cool. I'll have to check that out. And Nick?
So mine is probably, I guess it's a doodad. It's bear spray. So I went to Wyoming, and everybody that I talked to before I went said, you know, the grizzlies might be waking up. You might take some bear spray with you. So I bought some bear spray before I went down. And I didn't run into any grizzlies or anything, but I did have it on me. And especially since I took my 5-year-old son, I wasn't going to take any chances. I was ready to like gunsling whatever came at me down, because I was going to be protecting my son. And so I had it on my hip, and there was actually a time where I was shooting sunset, and a bull moose came out of the thicket out ahead of me, and it was, you know, it was a ways away. It was probably like 50 feet or something, but I was also like 200 feet from my car. So it was like one of those tense moments where I was like, I hope this moose is in a good mood. I'm going to quietly put my son in the car. And so I walked him back to the car, put him in there. And then I, you know, I tested my pepper spray, the bear spray that I had. And I discovered that you always want to point it downwind. I didn't really think about that, because, you know, it was like a very calm day, but it doesn't take much of a breeze. So I sprayed it, and sure enough, I sprayed it upwind, and I was like, I covered my face and my hands and stuff, but I still got enough of it in my lungs and I was coughing and hacking for the rest of the night. And, but yeah, bear spray is probably a good thing for us landscape photographers when we're going out and shooting until after dark. That's exactly when all those terrible animals want to come and eat us. So bear spray, and when you test it downwind, not upwind. So that's
wise counsel. I actually I asked my wife to carry bear spray in her purse, because I went to a police demonstration once where they tried the little tiny pepper sprays. Dude, that thing's like this tiniest little squirt gun. That thing isn't doing anything. So I was like, stick this big can in there. And yeah, nobody's attacking my wife.
Yeah, dude, these bear spray cans, they like shoot, I don't know, it was probably like 15 feet or something of this huge red cloud of pepper spray. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it didn't matter what was coming for me. I was going to get it, and it was going to ruin that animal's day.
That's right. Well, what I want to share as my dude out of the week is Overcast, not the cloud structure, but an app for the iPhone. I don't know if it's on Android, but it is a podcatcher. So whatever you're listening to right now, that's great, but it's worth trying Overcast. It's a free app, but then you have to pay a little extra to get some of the features in it. What I like about it is it has really smart ways that it plays the podcast. So I always listen to podcasts at 1.5 times speed, so you don't have to listen to us droning on for so long. I listen to 1.5 times speed, and what this does is it cuts out all silences in the talking, which makes it sounds really natural still, and you can get through the podcast super fast, and the voice enhance. It's been really nice. I don't like the Discovery so much, but everything else I really, really love. Overcast is my new favorite podcatcher. If you're on Android, my favorite when I was on Android is Dogcatcher. That was a good one at the time. So check out a couple new podcatchers, and then you may find yourself listening to us much faster. If you are listening to more podcasts, be sure to check out our new shows. Jeff is doing the Photo Taco podcast and is just killing it with that show. Just about all of us have episodes that we're going to have on there, but Jeff is the host of that show and does an episode once a week. They're short, 5-7 minute, totally information-packed tips. I've been getting some really cool stuff from you guys on there. Also, Portrait Session, that Nick and Darren are both on that show, and Erica, and that's been an awesome show. Really an enjoyable listen to hear you guys. I mean, you're all professional photographers, and I've been learning a ton of stuff from you guys, so thank you for doing that. And also Thoughts on Photography from Brian McGuckin, who couldn't join us tonight. Excellent in-depth information. I've loved listening to all your shows, so well done, guys, and we will see you in another few days.